Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, welcome to the Shackles Are Off podcast. You're probably a bit sick of cricket, especially after watching England in the T20 series, which, as we record this, we're just waiting for the dust to settle after that 3-2 series loss. I tell you what though, boys, it was a really good final game though, that one, wasn't it? Oh my word. I mean, I know it wasn't a particularly close game, but they welted it. There was that brilliant catch from CJ linking it up.
They did welted. Not spinach.
They did though. Sharma and Kohli were just sublime, weren't they? They were good to watch, and it was exciting. That catch as well from CJ, where he chucked it to Jason Roy. I mean, that was mustard, wasn't it? It wasn't all bad. Brooksy, was that the best you've seen?
It's got to be up there, isn't it? I mean, Roy's reaction, the dugout reaction behind. Just the pure athleticism and skill it takes at speed. In slow-mo, it looks actually quite easy, but in full speed, you're like, oh my days. CJ's got his own highlights reel for his fielding, hasn't he, in his catch.
Yeah.
It'll go down as a Jason Roy catch, assisted by CJ. But just on the game, the series was quality. England had opportunities to close out the games they lost at some earlier in the series. But India... But these two are obviously the two standout teams in the world, aren't they, in T20 cricket. And India were just better on the day, on a proper good 2020 road of a wicket, wasn't it? And we just didn't have enough firepower sort of to chase down that big score. India's bowling was probably slightly better than ours over the course of the series. Kohli, when he comes to the party, is unbelievable, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. He's unbelievable, and he's unbelievably annoying.
I hate seeing him rattled. Like,
one day I love him, one day I hate him.
But just some of the things he does winds me up. Like, I don't... Getting stuck into players, like, giving someone a send-off is bullshit in my eyes. I don't know what Joss did.
Hang on, Brooksy. You're, like, known for your send-offs.
But his is a celebration, though, isn't it? I'd say it's a celebration.
I've done one in my career and I regretted it.
Yeah, he didn't forget it, the bloke, did he?
And I was a lot younger. I don't know what Joss... I don't know if it's come out of... I don't know. I actually don't know. But if Joss actually did or said anything... Kohli obviously did something. I didn't really see it at the time, I just heard about it. But but when Kohli just moans at the umpire, it does my head in as well. That's even worse.
Mm. It was just weird how he was, it's your captain. It's not a good look, that, is it, particularly, as a professional cricketer?
It's the way, I think, you can speak to umpires, but it's just the way...
Aggression, isn't it?
It's very aggressive and sort of finger-pointing and stuff, and it's just not a good look for the game.
Mm.
But... Take it away from the fact he's an unbelievable cricketer and on form. you know, sort of guy you pay to watch bat, isn't he? And they've got some quality youngsters. That Suryakumar Yadav, he's going to be a proper player. Rishabh Pant's obviously a naughty little ramper, isn't he?
Yeah.
And, a naughty little ramper.
And Hardik as well. They've got some very good cricketers. They're going to be hard to beat in the World Cup, in the T20 World Cup later in the year. But England on that day, I'll still back them to beat them if they play to their best.
Yeah, definitely. And they're just annoying, aren't they, India? They're just annoying. Like when you think you're in a good position, like how good for 2/3 of the game were England set up? Like they got a big total and we were on for it. We were ahead of their rate, and then two good overs and suddenly they're absolutely demolishing us. It's frustrating, but it's well poised for the World Cup, and the England squad, T20 squad, is arguably the best it's ever been. The ODI squad is, as we know, but the T20 squad is as well, and players you could bring in, Moeen, Rooty, there's so much talent in the
ranks. I was going to say, is there still a spot for Rooty? I know we're all mates with him, but I'd still take Rooty anyway.
100%. 100%.
You think about the last time England chased 220, wherever it was. Rooty ended up with a red Inca, didn't he?
Yeah, 80-odd. Yeah. You need a stability. Like, Kohli does the role for India, stabilises an innings, goes quite hard, but it's overrun a ball, isn't he? And he scores at a good rate, and Rooty's done that recently. But I think they're also seeing it as Rooty's rest period because he's so full on with the test squad. And you can.
Oh, yeah, I don't disagree with that.
Yeah.
I also think England's top six, like any of them could bat anywhere in the top six. It's almost like they're so spoiled. They probably know what they want their lineup to be. But it almost comes down to form and how best to use them. It's really are spoiled. But then after that, it's then what do? Do they play Moeen and which bowlers do they go with?
Yeah. Hey, it's a good problem to have. Good problem to have, though. Talking of elite cricketing athletes, if you want to see one in action building up to his...
Talk about me again?
yes, we are, actually, as a matter of fact.
Oh, you actually are?
We actually are, Brooksy. I was looking, I was trying to eyeball you, and you were looking all excited. I thought, oh, he loves this. Right, great. So, just to give you a little tease ahead, over the next week or so after we put this podcast out, and probably due to our listenership, always listening to podcasts later than we actually put them out, you'll just head on to the Barmy on YouTube channel and you'll be able to see Brooksy and what goes on behind closed doors, effectively. Life in the day of a pro cricketer featuring our very own. Chris, you and I have had a little preview of it. Lots of questions, lots of questions. We won't spoil the video for you. do you really make those noises when you're in the gym?
Can I? More than likely, yeah. I make stupid noises all day, sometimes just to entertain myself. I'll just give from my point of view, having only recorded the clips and sent them on to Chris, which you've obviously seen as well, which is great, is what people should be looking out for is a mixture of the Truman Show and the Blair Witch Project. I'm excited to see / anxious to see what the end video looks like and a day in the life of Jack Brooks, the professional cricketer. And if it's well received, then we'll see where we go for an ongoing
amazing
chronicles news. We'll see, mate. Hopefully it's entertaining at very least.
What we need to stress is this is absolutely not an act. This is just a normal day for Brooksy. He is mental. And
I was
that's
at home.
Great.
I was recording myself having breakfast.
It was good. I'll enjoy the duck insight as well. But look, we're not going to spoil the video for you because it's great. So head to the Barmy Army YouTube channel. You'll be able to watch that in the coming days. It's brilliant. I have a feeling it's one of them things that we will be watching on loop over and over again because there's some absolute gold in there. So, Brooksy, thanks for that. Also, look, just a quick one before we finish off our intro and get into our guest for this week. What's David Nash? I mean, look, David Nash, brilliant guest. I mean, crackers, mad as a box of fogs. We could have talked to him all day. And he actually talks about some really serious issues in our conversation with him. But he does it in a way that actually it's not a difficult listen. But there is, I also must just stress, there's a little bit of bad language involved. So there's my little warning, customary warning. But he is absolutely brilliant, isn't he? And I mean, Chris, you've come across him in a business context. Brooksy, had you come across him in a playing context much before?
No, our careers missed each other. And I've known of him for years, obviously. People that I've played with or friends with have played with and friends with him. And there's a lot of David Nash stories flying around the circuit just because he was a bit different. But a fine cricketer who didn't probably quite live up to his potential. But funny man, been through it, had some issues, owned up to it, wrote a book. He's gone on to be a successful businessman who Chris has probably dealt with quite a lot off field. And he's just one of those guys that, at the very least, he'll be entertaining, and you'll be gutted to miss this one. I think this is going to be quite an interesting pod to listen to.
Yeah. From my dealings with him, he's always been very, very full on and very aggressive in the business world, but very successful. He's had a really good short business career, and he still works in the cricket industry doing some events. And D&G Group have gone from strength to strength in the last few years, and they're doing great things, raising a lot of money for charity through their online auctions and the events that they run. We've partnered with them many times before, and will do in the future. And he's a great guy to deal with. It's always fun at a business meeting. And if it ends up in the pub, it's normally more entertaining than not. So, a character, but we won't spoil it for anyone.
No, and like Brooksy said, some of these stories and tales of folklore that have gone around the county circuit, obviously, from Nashi's career, we do ask him about a couple of brilliant examples. And by the way, he doesn't hide them at all, does he? He does not shy away from it. So stay tuned. It is the brilliant David Nash on the Shackles Are Off podcast. We'll talk about the transcendence of the eras and stuff like that, because you obviously straddled the old school and the new school in many ways. But let's first talk about you and the old school. How was it growing up? Because I've looked at some of your stats and stuff, and they don't do this anymore, the under-19s test matches. But effectively, you were the Bradman of under-19s cricket, because you averaged over 100.
Mate, Jesus Christ. Keep going. I don't want to stop you there. Jesus Christ, Bradman. I can see the Middlesex lads spitting their breakfasts out now laughing at this one. Jesus Christ. I think I was very, very lucky on that trip. The wickets were very, very flat. The only place that I ever was at Taunton, and the wickets at Lahore and Rawalpindi were like Taunton. So, it definitely helped me playing out there. The ball didn't do too much, but as an under 19, well, pretty much from an England under 15 onwards, from England 15, 17s, 19s, I was a very good cricketer. I loved the game then, and I was a high achiever, as shown by my 12 England under 19 test matches and my Bradman-esque average of over 100. it was soon as those England under 19 days finished, and I actually, in my first six games for Middlesex, I got 100 against Essex, 90-odd against Durham, and I averaged, I think, about mid-50s, 60s. And I went on the England A tour to Sri Lanka and Kenya with Freddie and Harmy and, Jilo and Nick Knight, Mark Elam, those sort of boys, Darren Maddy. And then from there, it was just, it was a slippery slope, and it all went tits up, to be totally honest with you.
What do you mean tits up? What do you mean by that, Nashi?
I went from being a young prodigy to someone that was just a journeyman pro.
Hard though, isn't it?
What happened there, Nashi? Why?
I got on the booze too much. I probably suffered with a little bit of addiction. Didn't love the game. I was only doing it because I didn't want to let my parents down. As time went by and as I sort of hit the booze more and just didn't take it seriously, didn't train hard enough. I was basically at uni, but being paid for it, in truth.
You had a good time, then.
Yeah, I was definitely having a good time. And, it was almost an amateur game that was a professional game. It was more about the fun and the party rather than, it being a professional. Maybe in today's society with the lads just playing FIFA in the hotels and not going out, having team meals and having fun and, having the urine tests in the morning, I would have probably done well and sort of reached the levels that I probably should have achieved, because you know, I can't imagine my urine test in the morning after eight bottles of Cobra and a gel Frazee. You know, I certainly would have been found out. There would have been no way to hide that. But unfortunately, yeah, that was, I don't think I loved the game. I loved obviously what cricket gave. I loved the lads. I loved the football in the morning. I loved the banter. I loved the piss taking. I just loved the camaraderie and the family. But in honest truth, I didn't love cricket.
Any regrets from that period, Nashi, or are you happy with how it all played out for you?
My regrets were I didn't finish it sooner, in truth, because I was reeked with self-doubt. I had a huge fear of failure. I feigned injury on numerous occasions to get out of the matches that I was actually playing in at the time, because I thought I'd be able to get through it, and then anxiety would hit me. And I just then, you know, I don't know if any of you have had anxiety, but when I got it really bad. I literally couldn't breathe. It was horrific. So there was no way I could continue. But if I'd have sort of gone to the powers that be, I had nothing else at that time. If I'd have gone to the powers that be, it would have shown massive weakness. And I probably would have been, you know, at the time, anxiety wasn't an issue. No one knew about mental health. They would have probably put me in a straitjacket and, you know, wheeled me out to the hospital. And, you know, I couldn't speak to anyone about it. And when it first hit, I went to my local doctor, bless him, Dr. Duckworth, and he basically just said, I'll drink more water.
No.
You know, he said that you're dehydrated, drink more water. Because I was saying I was struggling to get the distance with just simple throws that were coming in from the boundary. I wasn't able to judge it. And, you know, I now know it was anxiety and mental health. But, he put it down to dehydration.
That's really interesting, because obviously you played with Harmison, Flintoff, and there was that culture, wasn't there, in the under-19s where, you know, you hear the stories about Flintoff sort of signing himself up at 19 years old when he was the skipper, just so he could get served, basically, on tour and all that kind of stuff. And that,
yeah.
Look, I mean, you know, it's great that Fred can laugh about that now. And I mean, were you there for that, by the way?
A few of the lads, so that was in Lahore, a few of the lads, we had to basically sign that, a few of the lads, I think Freddie was one, had to sign a declaration that he was an alcoholic for us to get booze in the rooms.
Wasn't his bath full of it as well? It was like he filled it with ice and beers and stuff.
We had a great trip. We were in Lahore and I remember they flew over some VBs for Christmas Day and stuff like that. But then we found out that if you were an alcoholic, they then signed a declaration. They had to then sort you out some booze in the hotel. So a few of the lads had to sign up as alcoholics. Oh, God bless. That was a great trip. I mean, I remember that trip really, really well. Because within the first three or four days, me and Fred were very close to Harmy's room. And I'd just hear crying, uncontrollable crying in the evenings. So I said to Fred, look, is Harmy all right? So we went in and saw Harmy. And we were 3 days in and he just said, lads, I can't do this. I need to go home. I hate it. Like, I've never been out of Ashington. And, you know, then we took him to the management and Phil Neal, probably not my favourite bloke. I talk about sewers and drains in my book. That bloke is certainly a drain. He is one hell of a mood hoover, old Phil Neal. But to be fair, we took him to Phil and Harmy had left the trip within a week.
Seriously, I mean, it's interesting that there's you, Fred, Harmy, and probably a whole host of others who've all suffered from some kind of cricket depression, if you want to call it that, anxiety, and all obviously honest blokes and talked about it and still flourished and come through it from the other side. But weird, that isn't it? Really weird environment. Do you reckon it? I mean, it's got to have improved since then for the young lads now.
Look, it's very, very hard for me to comment, but obviously I know that the young lads are very, very different. But from what I'm hearing, there's a lot of the young lads that are on meds. There was no meds in my day. There's no meds in my day. I think a lot of the young lads are on meds. It's a game that, to be totally honest with you, it does you in the head, you know, because whether you're a batter, bowler, whatever, you know, you're always worried about your next contract. When you're giving something to your sport, you're not earning a lot of money unless you play for England. You know, you're a somebody for a while, but I think, you know, if you're honest, a lot of cricketers everyone has got self-doubt. Everyone's got fear of failure. That's why you look at the, you know, the guys that have gone on to be really, really good. You know, in my team at Middlesex, the people like Andrew Strauss and Owe Sharp, if you looked at those two in a net next to each other, you would 100 people out of 100 would basically say that Owe Sharp was the bloke that played 100 test matches. But no, it was Andrew Strauss. And Andrew Strauss was able to do it because he worked harder than anyone else and he was very on a level. You didn't know at the end of the day whether he'd got 100 or not. He just stayed on the level, whereas a lot of us were very up and down in our moods depending on how well we did. And that's why Strauss, he had such a great career. He stayed on a level. But no, mental health. But then you had a lot of people on that trip, you know, your Alex Tudors, your David Saleses, those sort of people, Chris Reeds, that probably weren't the type of people that suffered with mental health because they seemed to love cricket. But I don't know, maybe they thought I loved cricket, but in total truth, probably then I did a little bit. I did probably. I was taking it from, but as I got into sort of my mid-20s and it became a job, I really didn't enjoy it. If I could get through every day without failing, I was happy. And I just wanted to, I didn't know what else I could do because you basically feel that, you know, I've got no real skills. If I'm honest, in life, I did all right in GCSEs. I did very averagely in my A-levels at Malvern College, but I was able to obviously have a good network from my Malvern College days. But I had very little else. I didn't have any real skills. And when I came out the game, I had no skills. But what I did, I had the confidence that because of my testimonial year, I had a confidence that I was able to... people liked me and they were always willing to help me and do business for me.
Yeah. And when you retired from cricket, Nashi, could you have ever envisaged how far you'd have gone in business? Because I'm sure a lot of people be aware, but you're a very successful businessman now. Could you have imagined that you'd reach the levels that you have since cricket when you were that age?
Not at all, but I still fear failure every day. I still feel failure every day, which is my reason, is which what drives me on. But I now actually feel like I've got a purpose. So I've got a purpose. I've got, you know, in our business, we've raised over 20 million quid for charity as well. Obviously, we do well as well out of it. But I've got a purpose to get up, so I'm making a difference. And I feel that all sort of the business deals we do, a lot of them have a giving back element. And I'm able to, you know, do things that I didn't envisage I would be able to do, like support kids in Sri Lanka, support an orphanage in Sri Lanka as well, and just do different things like local people. We have a thing at my business, D&G Group, where every month we basically try and do something for someone in the local community. So, one of my favourite ones I did was I heard of a local guy that had been stabbed outside a kebab shop at 3 o'clock. So I got hold of his number, spoke to him and said, look, you know, you've got through this. It's been shocking, but what would you love to do? And with your parents? And he said, well, I'll tell you what, I'm a massive Villa fan and I'd love to go to the cup final, the Carling Cup final. So I then sorted out some tickets in the Bobby Moore and we were able to take him and his family to the cup final and he was there in tears. And, you know, you're able to make a difference to people and make them smile. So, that gives me a purpose every day now.
I think it's much more important, Ash, and you obviously would know this as well, to be a better bloke than to be a better cricketer, though, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's the one thing that I really sort of I push to all guys that sort of have called me that are coming out of the game. I had a good chat with Dane Villas the other day about what he wants to do next, etc. Your key is, your currency is while you're playing cricket. You have to be setting up your businesses while you're playing cricket, 100%, because people want to know you. That is when you have a currency. CEOs will meet you. You can do stuff with sponsors. Soon as you leave the game, your currency just drops. People don't want to know you as much. But if you're a good bloke, like anything, I mean, I got our first bit of business by basically turning up to events that were CEOs were at. And I went up to a guy called John King, the then CEO of House of Fraser, and I had a shit pitch. He was there eating his lamb shank at the Grosvenor, and I'd basically gone through the table plan and said, that's the CEO of House of Fraser. That would be our perfect client. I went up to him and I just stood next to him and he looked at me and he then stood up and he said, do I know you? I said, hi, John, I'm really sorry to bother you whilst you're eating your lamb shank. Look, I'm a shit ex-cricketer. called David Nash. I played at Middlesex very badly. I think I've got a great idea for your foundation and to support your CSR program. Someone gave you your opportunity. Can you please give me mine? That was my pitch. And he looked at me and said, right, interesting. Tell me more Tuesday morning. Gave me his card, said, see me at House of Fraser headquarters, 9 o'clock Tuesday morning. Went in, spoke to him, and he gave me my first opportunity. And then we were able to roll out the case study from then.
That's so good. That is so good. What I find interesting, Nash, you know, you're saying that you hated the game, right? And obviously you're saying that your currency is whilst you're still playing the game and all that kind of thing. Did you, I mean, a lot of people find it hard to believe that somebody who's played like 300 professional games of cricket and had such a long, successful career at, you know, a really massive county playing at Lord's week in, week out, hated the game of cricket. Like, it just absolutely baffles me. And
it baffles me as well. It baffles me, honestly. But it's what's going on inside your head. Your head's a really weird place. Like, it's, you know, I was probably doing it for the wrong reasons. I just didn't want to let my parents down. I'm quite a straight, sort of transparent, emotional bloke. And, you know, they followed me around the country. You know, they loved it. They were so proud of me. But really, you know, when I'd go and get a few low scores, and I'd be, particularly when I was younger, you know, I was living with my parents. So I'd come home and they'd be like, you know, they'd be sort of walking on eggshells around me, you know, don't worry about it. It's only a game. And that would then infuriate me even more because I could feel I was letting them down.
Yeah.
So it's just, unfortunately, the game just fucks with your head in truth. And look, the PCA do all they can. They really do a great job. And the guy they've got in as CEO there, I've been really, you know, over the years, I think the CEO they've had, I've been sort of really underwhelmed by. But the CEO they've got now, Rob Lynch, that did all the commercial stuff at Middlesex, he's absolutely brilliant. And, you know, I've had lots of good chats with him about, honest chats about the lads. Because there'll still be a lot of lads that aren't coming forward about, you know, issues and problems and anxieties, et cetera. And those are the guys you want to help. And this was my main reason for doing the book, basically. You know, I'm a short, fat, bald bloke from somebody with honestly no skills, or my only skill being people. And if I can go and be successful, then all these people coming out the game can be as well.
I think that's a point to remember, that Nashi isn't a one-off here. Like, obviously, I've been around the game for a while now, played at a few different teams, and this is common. Like, county cricket in particular is a bit of a head fuck at times. Mm. People take the piss and say it's the grind, where it is. Obviously, everyone's living their dreams and having fun, but sometimes if it's all you know, because it's such an up and down, you set up to fail most of the time in cricket, particularly if you're a batter. Mm. You can see why so many people battle, and if it's all they know and they're scared to get out of it or scared of the other side, they don't enjoy it and they don't get better. And it passes you by and you don't want regrets. Like, I've always had different views on it a little bit because I came in a bit later and had a different angle with it, but I've played with so many people, talented or not, really good players who have suffered anxiety, depression, and, you know, sometimes just not really enjoyed playing the game. I found it difficult to experience that myself. But
how are you with it yourself, Brooksy? Because if I turn the TV on, I just see a guy that was loving the game, you know, headband, bit of a bloke that did it his own way, looked pretty cool, enjoying it, smiling, going about his business as if like it was his dream. Was that reality?
No one's ever said I've looked cool, mate, so thanks for that.
I thought you looked very cool. Maybe
my missus never says that.
My man crush.
My missus never says that, mate. She thinks I'm anti-cool.
I prefer the hair longer, though, so grow it out a bit more.
Absolutely. Mate, I've got no choice in the last few months. I think my view, it's nice that it's viewed like that because I came into it late and I was very much a bit of a clubby who got lucky and enjoyed the amateur side of it. And it was my hobby and I just had a passion for it since I was a kid. I sort of carried that into the game and I've been really lucky that my career hasn't really had a real bad trot or a bad run of form. I haven't played a lot of second team cricket in and out playing for my career sort of thing. And then being in good environments and good teams, it sort of keeps you on a high edge. So yeah. I've been really lucky that I wake up every day thinking a bad day for me, no wickets, no runs, an awful loss. You know, it'd take me a few hours to get over it, but I'm like, it's better than sitting in an office what I was doing before, or I could be doing anything. I could be cleaning toilets or something. Like, it's better than a lot of jobs.
You, That's really interesting because a good friend of mine played at Middlesex for a few years, a guy called Tim Bloomfield. He came from it from exactly the same side. He was a clubby that loved the game, that would turn up on a Saturday, et cetera, play minor counties. And he loved every day. You could literally see it. Like, he loved it. And whereas I'd been in the game from a Middlesex under nine, going through the system, being the big player, you know, under 11s, England under 15s, 17s, 19s, the pressure and all that, like trying to live up to a bit of hype and all that sort of stuff. And I think it's different doing it the way round you did it. And sort of Strousey came in the game a bit late at 21 as a clubby, you know, no one knew him at Oxfordshire, et cetera, et cetera. So it was a free hit almost for him. Do you know what I mean? In a way. I don't know.
He's from Oxford as well. There's obviously good blokes come through the Oxford system.
The good blokes come out of the Oxford system. Definitely, that's one for Tom Harrison, ECB. Plow some more money into the Oxford system, Harrison.
No, I've tried. I spoke to James Hildreth about it because he's a similar age and he's had a real long career, a lot of cricket. And I've played against him for years and you think you know someone, but until you play with them and spend time with them away from the game or in the change room a bit more. And he said, like, I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you get back in and behave and relax like you do. And I said, well, it's because I've got perspective and I could be doing something else that's not as fun. Like, a bad day in cricket is not a bad day in life. Like, it's still a very good day.
Mm.
And he said, it's so difficult to have that perspective when all you've known is cricket.
Yeah, I sort of agree with that. And no, it's a really, really interesting one. It's a brutal game because you go up, you know, coming out the game, you're a sort of a somebody in cricket because people follow it. And, you know, I'd go up to my local pub or whatever and want to chill out and have a couple of beers with the boys. And, you know, I just don't understand people sometimes. People come up to me and go, oh, yeah, I've got you in my fantasy league team and you got me minus points. And I'd just be thinking, would I go up to someone and go, oh, I hear you're doing really shit at work? I just find people really, really weird. And, you know, you should want to make people feel good in your company. But people just, I suppose, I don't know, people just, there's a lot of sad people out there. But it's a weird world, you know. Cricket is a tough place to be. It's a tough sport. But I do think because it's such a tough sport, it should make good businessmen. Because you have to mix, you have to be with people. And, you know, it burns my ass when I see now these young lads. I'll go to a function, because I still like still an ambassador at Middlesex, and I introduce them to a few sponsors and stuff like that. And I love the club, obviously. The club's massive for me. You know, Middlesex has been, cricket's basically given me my opportunity in life to make something of my life. So it burns my ass when I see the 10 lads all standing around in a circle chatting to each other. No, get out and speak to the sponsors, speak to the punters. These could be your people that are going to help out in the second phase of your life, of your development. Do not be chatting to the lads. You chat to the lads for 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
It burns my ass.
I say exactly the same, mate. It's just the problem that a lot of people who come through now, sort of youngsters, they don't have the social skills and they're not ingrained. They're looking down at their phones more than looking up and around. And like what you've done, obviously you say you're a bit of a boozer and you pissed it away, but obviously it meant you were very sociable. You were good at speaking. You weren't afraid of speaking to people. Even if you were, like I was, when I first started doing it back at North, I forced myself to do it because I got better at talking to people. And people, like, believe it or not, people actually want to speak to you. So as soon as you approach them, speak to someone.
Yeah,
you haven't got to do a lot of speaking after that.
You're a somebody. And the one thing that I've found out about CEOs, they all, generally all the best CEOs love sport because they can talk to people, they're leaders. And let's be honest, sport provides leaders and leadership without doubt. And they love sports people. So I think there's a huge opportunity. They want to give you a go because they know you're going to give it your best shot. They know that you're not going to want to let anyone down. And I think there's a massive opportunity in business for people coming out of sport. But, you know, it's hard work. Got to go, like Don McCarthy, the ex-chairman of House of Fraser, basically, after John King gave me my first opportunity, got on really, really well with Don, went up to see him and say, Don, how do I scale this business? You've done brilliant in business. You know, you're worth over 200 million quid. You're a barrow boy from South London. How have you done it? And he went, Nashi lad, just done it by three things. Get great people around me. Go with your gut feel and make sure you whack your best suit on when you meet your bank manager. And I try and just stick to those principles.
Quality. Better go and buy a good suit then.
Yeah.
Go Neil McCann. Neil McCann's the man. He can make anyone look cool. Neil McCann. Good plug for you there, Macca.
You can sort me a deal out, can't you, Nashy?
Yeah, of course I can.
Love
it. Of course
I can. Anything but your birthday suit. But Greg, have you got some questions? I want to change tact a little bit.
Yeah, and, same. I mean, look, I love how honest you've been, Nashy. It's great. It's brilliant. And I hope anybody who's listening to this podcast now, if they take anything, even if it's one thing that you've said away today, it's going to be absolutely quality. So thank you so much, Nashy. Look, cricket... was one of those things that you said that, you know, you didn't love the game, but it provided with a lot of opportunity. And also, by the sounds of things, from what we've sourced off a few bits of intel from around the county championship circuit when you were playing, also a lot of fun as well, Nashy.
Yeah.
Brooksy, you've got a couple of bits, haven't you, off an unnamed source?
I have, mate. I've done a little bit of digging because I didn't play with Nashy or play against him myself. I wish I had done because I think we'd have enjoyed a few beers in the evening chatting absolute fingers to each other. But if you can guess who's given me these two little snippets about you from your playing days, then fair play to you. But it's someone that I know quite well that you played with at Middlesex. First story, you've got to say if it's true or not and maybe elaborate on it.
Yeah.
He said to me, we were playing a game against Sussex, I think, at Lords. Weather was horrendous. Rained all day. We suggest that if we put money into a pot, Nashy would strip naked, run downstairs, out through the long room. This is at Lords, by the way, the home of cricket.
Yeah.
Out into the field, onto the covers, do a Klinsman across the covers. There were still supporters in the ground.
Yeah. This, unfortunately, is a true story. And the boys, so basically, we'd had a few beers. It smashed down with rain. Sussex were about 7 down. We were meant to win, and it just pissed down with rain. So we're all gutted, but we're having a few beers. We'd totally outplayed them. We never outplayed Sussex because Mushy always bowled us out. So we didn't know how we were doing it, to be fair. It smashed down with rain. And, you know, I don't know if you've ever played at Lords. When it monks it down in those days before the drainage, the water was just, it just stayed on the surface. So we'd had a few beers, and then we're just chatting about the Klinsman dive. And then I tell you what I said to the lads. I tell you what, I'll put in 20 quid and I'll do a naked Klinsman dive. So we scrambled together, I think about 240 quid that the lads said that they'd all put in or whatever. So I've gone out, down through the long room, et cetera, out onto, in my towel, to be fair. And then I've thrown my towel up and then I've sprinted and I've done a Klinsman dive across the covers. As you said, just flew for miles. It was absolutely quality. Loved it. Well, little did I realise there was obviously still the groundsman was still there and they were still pressing the media centre. So I got the Telegraph the next day. But the worst part of it, as I was walking back, picked up my towel, put my towel back on, walked through the long room with the geezers at the door and the lady and the guy at the door and the pavilion managers like laughing at me. I then got onto the floor of the long room and I've stacked it. Because my feet are wet, I've slipped like that and I've stacked it and I'm looking up on the floor at the ceiling with the guys coming to help me up. So I've hobbled up the stairs, got there to the change room and the lads said, oh, that was just brilliant. They were on the balcony clapping me, both sets of Sussex and Middlesex, and I'm giving it this one. So I've got in there and then obviously there was no money forthcoming as the lads were getting showered and changed. Got no cash sorted out, which basically has taught me one of the key principles in business. Make sure you get your cash up front. Make sure you get your cash up front, businessmen, lads that are going into business. That's very, very important. But then I knew I was in a bit of trouble when Tuffers came over to me, put his arm around me and said, Nashy, that was brilliant, mate. If they try to sack you, I'll make sure I'll back you.
That's not words of encouragement.
I started thinking, shit, fuck, I'm in trouble here.
Oh, man, that is so
got called in the next day when it was in the papers. It was in the Telegraph. I was flipping. Luckily, there was no picture because I'm only 5'7" and I wouldn't say I'm hung like a donkey.
Everything's in proportion, David.
I was, but I'm certainly not. So got called in, and luckily they just. Because I was doing well, at that stage, and I was young and I was a bit of a legend, I got looked after. But if it had been sort of to the back end of my career, unfortunately, I think I would have been sacked.
Wow. If
there's a bit of social media around, there might have been a few video clips flying around as well.
That's a shame. That's a massive shame.
It is a shame.
Brilliant.
What was the other one, Brooksy?
We need to get that money. We need to get that money for you, mate, don't we?
Yeah.
We do. What was the other one?
The second one is just a very quick brief. Ask him how he got his nickname, Knocker.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Jesus Christ, who has dubbed me in here, Brooksy? So it's someone you played with for a long time.
I played with him in minor counties cricket. It was our
Richo. Richo.
No.
Minor counties cricket. Peblo.
No, mate.
Who would this be?
You're trying to work out who stitched you up.
Yeah, but I'll tell you the story whilst it's still computing in my head. So the story Knocker, right, this was part of my mental health issues. So I really, really struggled. I basically had an addiction to, what do they call it, when you have to walk around the stumps the right way, same way.
Superstition, yeah.
Superstition. I was very superstitious. So I'd had to make sure in the morning all the taps were off in the house, the mat was in the perfect position, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I had all these bad things going through my head that if I didn't touch the bloke up the other end's pad, I'd get out next ball. Like, honestly, my head was a bad place to be. It's never a good place to be, but it was a really bad place to be because cricket basically, you know, it makes you really, really superstitious, or it made me really superstitious. So basically, one day I was bored, we were batting, and our changing room attendant at the time, Peter Lowe, Taff, I think he's still actually the away attendant. He's the absolute legend. He's the best bloke in the game. I went up to him and said, Taff, I'm feeling a bit randy. Have you got anything for me? And he said, yeah, I've got a couple of these magazines. So I took these magazines and took them off to the toilet and did what every young lad sort of sometimes needs to do. Came back in, there was a wicket, put my pads on, went out and got 100. So basically, I then basically thought, well, flipping hell, there must be something in that. So I continued doing it. And thus, the boys gave my nickname Knocker Nash, as if I'm knocking one out. Yeah.
Oh, wow. I wasn't expecting to take that down this path.
Jesus. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I know what the title for this podcast is going to be. Knocker.
Yeah, not a proud moment. But yeah, I had all the lads that sort of played against me would realise it'd be like eight. It'd be the hottest day of the summer. And because I did well batting in a long sleeve jumper, I wouldn't change it. So it'd be 85 degrees and I'd roll out in my long sleeve jumper. And it just, unfortunately, I had one of those heads that was a bit mad. Yeah. And I've still got it, unfortunately.
I'll say a big thank you to Jamie Hewitt for those. Then.
Jamie Hewitt. Oh, my God. What a legend. Love him. Love Huey. What a legend he is. One of the good men.
He married the Lord's ground with Mickey Hunt's daughter, didn't he?
He did, mate. Joe, absolutely lovely. She's an absolute legend. They've got a lovely family. Huey, one of the good blokes, played at my club, Sunbury, for a few years as well.
Yeah, he's a top man. He had a lot of fun with him playing for Oxfordshire after he'd retired from cricket.
Love the weight session, Huey, didn't he? Jesus, he's, big
he
boy.
He's like Chris Tremblett now, isn't he?
Yeah, I saw a photo of the old England legends the other day with old Tremors in it. Jesus, Tremors is big boy, strong, isn't he?
Well, I just dropped a photo in this morning of Tremblett with his arm around Sachin. and it's just, I dropped it in the WhatsApp group this morning and just thought, wow. And it's just hilarious, isn't it? I can't stop looking at it.
Is that from that Legends game?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, awesome.
And Sachin's obviously like 5 foot sod all, and he's next to Tremblett, who's massive. And then there's like, he just looks like a little bloke. He's hilarious. Chris, you had a couple of bits, didn't you, to chuck it at Nash?
Yeah, someone's dubbed you in. I think you probably guess who it is, but it's to do with a story with David Lloyd when he was your coach on an away team.
Oh, yeah. Jesus. Bumble. I love Bumble. He was absolutely brilliant. You know, I've spoken about not being too complimentary about Phil Neal because he just wasn't a leader. You know, he was a mood hoover. But Bumble, he made it fun. You run through brick walls for Bumble. And that's what leadership's about. Someone that actually you know, makes brightens your day up, makes it fun, and actually, you know, you wanna do your best for him. He was absolutely brilliant, but that bumble got me at the time, basically, that I wasn't, you know, I was starting on that slippery slope. You know, we had people like, I haven't seen, I'd love a reunion, but we had people like Alex Morris at Yorkshire. Almo was a brilliant left-handed batter. Bold Seamers played for Hampshire and Yorkshire for a bit. Absolute legend, but oh my God, like, did he love a night out? And I got in with him and a guy called Legs, an off-spinner from Glamorgan, and, you know, and Freddie and the lads, and we hit it pretty hard. But on that trip, yeah, it was it an England A trip or was it an under-19 trip? I think it was England A.
Yeah,
was it an A trip?
Yeah.
I think it was. And, so basically it wasn't. It was an under-19 trip to Zimbabwe. It was Zimbabwe under-19s, that was it, which was a slippery slope because on that trip I missed the plane. So, it was a nightmare. It was a stinker. Shah was meant to wake me up and he didn't. Blimmin', and they left me. So it wasn't great. That was where I got a very bad tour report and it started going downhill. But thanks for that, Shah. Useless at alarm calls, but never mind. So, yeah, so I'd had my birthday the night before. It'd been a massive, massive night out and they had me up singing. Every time they'd sung Here's to Nashie, He's So Blue, I had to stand on my flipping chair and neck a carafe of wine from the table. So obviously, I don't take my booze too well being a little lad. And I was out for the count. Next day, we're playing a game. I think it was like a warm-up game against Zimbabwe, someone, all right. Well, I can't remember who it was. But I'm in the middle doing the stretch. And then we've gone off for a run to the side screen and back, and I've continued going to the bushes to puke up all over the bushes. And as Bumble says it, I think there was sort of 14 that went out and only 13 came back. And not my finest hour, but I think that was the start of the slippery slope, to be totally honest with you, not taking the game seriously enough.
Yeah. You've done a bit of coaching, haven't you? What's this about, some association with, is it Team GB cricket in Israel or something? So talk to me about that, because I was trying to sort of piece it together a little bit online and I just couldn't work it out. So I want you to kind of tell us what it's all about, Nashie.
So basically, one of the guys that I've been that I've really looked up to and has been a great mentor to me is a guy called Hilton Nathanson, who's done amazingly in finance, runs one of the top hedge fund businesses, Marble Bar. He's an absolute legend. He's given over 80 million to charity as well. Wow. He's a giver, but he's just he's worth huge amounts of money, but he's just a normal bloke that is just a mate, basically, who's an absolute legend. And just the way he goes about people, the respect he treats people with, et cetera, et cetera. It's just the way I want to lead my life. I mean, I say to my girls, look, just be the best you can be every day, but just make sure you treat people the way you want to be treated yourself. See, the one thing I hate is basically people that get bigger than the game. You know, one thing I always remember is I asked KP to sign two bats for me and two montages in my benefit year. Whilst I was away, I left them with Taft's change room attendant. When I came back and said, has KP done the montages and the bats? He says he's done the bats, but if you want him to do the montages, you need to ring him. And I just felt that was poor. That was someone that's got a huge ego and he's not a good bloke in truth. So I just think it's really, really important to be a good bloke. Hilton's a great bloke. Just because he's successful doesn't mean that you can treat people in the wrong way. And he asked me to basically be coach of the British GB team to go to the Maccabiah Games, which is the Jewish Olympics. And of course I said, yes, I'd love to. So we worked hard with the team, et cetera, et cetera. And we were trying to come back with a medal. And we did really, really well. We came back with a bronze. I felt we could have probably done better. But, you know, we lost some important stages in the semi-final match against South Africa. But we got the bronze in the bronze medal match against India. But it was amazing. It was an amazing thing to do. 36,000 people at the Teddy Stadium opening ceremony, walking around with a GB flag. And it was absolutely brilliant. I mean, I said to Hilton, look, you know, I'm so not Jewish. I love a bacon sandwich. And the closest thing I am to being Jewish is that as a 4-year-old, I had my little one done. So at least when I was in the shells with the lads, I looked like one of the boys.
Cavaliers being the roundheads, eh?
Exactly. But it was an amazing experience. Loved every minute of it. To go through and find out more about the culture. To go to Yad Vashem and, you know, go through everything that see what the Jewish people went through. Shocking times. You know, it really was shocking with the Germans and stuff. And it was awful. But to learn so much about it, you know, in Jerusalem and be able to visit all the sort of the cultural things. It was a pretty amazing experience. And I've got to say, you know, it was never on my radar as a place to go to, but it is absolutely stunning. It really, really is stunning. And Tel Aviv as a place, beautiful beaches, absolutely stunning, absolutely beautiful place. And yeah, great.
We'll get ourselves there. But before we lose you, can you give us a little bit of insight into your new venture in terms of a bar? Because I think it's really cool. I know all about it, of course. But can you tell all our listeners what you've set up?
Yeah, so basically we partnered with the guys at Mac and Wild, Callum and Andy War. They've got a really, really successful restaurant business, Mac and Wild. They do a bit with Beckham and his whiskey brand, Hague, too. And we've got a cricketing concept, much like Flight Club, experiential venue, sporting venue, Flight Club, Putt Shack, Top Golf, those type of places, but of cricket. So effectively, got great food, great booze in there, but you've got nets in there where you'll basically face a bowler, and it will come out the simulator. And whether you're professional standard, junior standard, or whatever, you put on different standards, it comes out a different pace, different swing. If you're facing the spinner, different amounts of spin. If you play professional level against the spinner, it literally is like facing Murali. Got Straussie on there and he was just playing and missing every ball. But I was just saying sweeping. But problem is with the sweep shot, you can only get four. You have to hit down the ground to get your sixes. So you've got to really take a risk to basically hit the ground against big spin. So it's not easy. But it's such fun. It really is. It's 40 minutes in there, but it's absolutely brilliant. And we're looking at other venues. We're just signing heads on terms with two venues, one in Great Portland Street in London. We've got obviously up and running with a Fulham venue, which is amazing. Great Portland Street heads and terms we're doing. And also we've got the Corn Exchange in Manchester, because at the moment, obviously commercial property is really, really cheap. We got a deal up there, an old steak business, unfortunately, have gone into liquidation. They'd spent $3.5 million on the fit out. So we've got 18 months rent free, and then it's $100,000 a year. But that comes with obviously the fit out plus all furniture. So commercial deals at the moment are unbelievable. And we're basically taking the punt that the world is going to come back with a bang. And I think people are going to want to have fun. They're going to want to see their mates. They're going to want to see their clients. So we think hospitality and F&B is a good spot to be in.
Yeah. Quality. Hey, Nashi, it's been an absolute pleasure. Absolute pleasure listening to you. Could listen to you all day, mate. We'll definitely be popping in when things open up to have a little whack in the nets. I'll be playing and missing, but sounds like I'm in good company because Straussie did the same. So that's all good, isn't it?
Worst case, mate, we've got the best booze and the best burgers in town. So you'll love it.
Oh, I'm in.
We'll get you boys down as well, because I tell you what we should do. We should get you boys to come down and take on, because Hawksby and Jacobs are coming down as well. Five live boys. Awesome. So we'll get you boys to join us when coming down, when we're all allowed.
Quality.
All over that, mate.
Nashi, thanks
stay
so
safe,
much, mate.
Stay safe, boys. Brooks, if you need me for anything, mate, I'm on the end of a phone. And look, to all those cricketers, anyone that's coming out of the game, if you want any support, mate, give me my email's dnash@dggrp.com. Love to chat to you if I can help in any way. I really will.
Top man, Nashi.
Thanks, boys. Stay safe. Good luck.
Podcast Network.